In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
What people are finding out these last 2 weeks is exactly what iSpy listeners have known for well over a decade. If you want to kill leftist ideology, take away their funding. Why? Because their ideology is not popular. It's an emotions-based belief system based on a twisted perception of the world and of people and of society. That's why it fails. President Trump even echoed this while signing executive orders, referring to the Democrats, he said, "Nobody likes their ideas." It is a political ideology that is so distasteful, so unliked, that it needs massive taxpayer dollars to survive, to prop it up through constant marketing and propaganda. We first uncovered the funding cycle of leftist ideology while interviewing Ron Arnold and Joanne Nova about climate change funding and Agenda 21. And while iSpy listeners have known about this for a long time, thankfully, this is now finally getting exposed on a much larger scale. These last 10 days or so, USAID has been exposed as a major funding model of the leftist ideology all across the globe. And that's just one agency. The theme of today's show is we need to stop tolerating incompetence. We've become used to stupid, conditioned to accept inadequate, to accept corruption as that's just the way it is. From our very earliest days on iSpy, we have said repeatedly that the biggest problem with government is that it's almost impossible to hold bureaucrats accountable. No one in government is ever punished for failure or incompetence. Accountability was non-existent. So what if you wasted $1 billion or two? That's the opposite of the private sector. If you waste $1 billion or worse, slip it to your friends, at a minimum you'd be fired and probably jailed. What we've really done is we've institutionalized theft and incompetency and corruption. We have created a system that makes it easy to steal from taxpayers and then remove the ability to punish them when they get exposed. In that kind of system, don't be surprised when those in charge demonstrate the worst of human behaviors, reward their friends, and use a bottomless government checkbook to punish their enemies. With literally trillions of dollars on the line, is it any wonder the deep state did everything they could to stop Trump from becoming president again, including, perhaps, an attempt on his life? On today's show, we're going to look at incompetence on the state level in a department where it has been going on for more than a decade, and then in the second half of our show, we will look at one ideology that Trump just shredded. I'd like to welcome Lisa Lettmeyer back to the show. She is our go-to expert when we want some common sense answers to the insanity of what has become our once proud healthcare system. She's also the owner of HealthSource Northwest, a company that helps individuals find the best insurance and Medicare plans for them. Lisa, it's great to talk to you today.
Good to talk to you too.
Yeah, you know, we normally talk healthcare with you. We're not talking healthcare or insurance today. We're talking about another problem yet again with Oregon's unemployment department. And in case people have grown numb to the colossal failure of Oregon's unemployment office, and just roll their eyes whenever they see Oregon Unemployment Department in headlines without actually reading the story. The failing there at the unemployment office has been going on for well over a decade. They made a bit of progress years ago when it turns out their computer system was outdated, so they got handed a bunch of cash to upgrade, but then did nothing with it, sat on it for well over a decade. People really paid attention, though, during COVID when a few hundred thousand Oregonians were out of work and depended on unemployment, which they'd been paying into, but the unemployment department failed again, and then they finally were forced into updating through an act of the legislature, and in 2023, finally upgraded with a new hardware system in place a few months later, only for it to fail once it launched in 2024 in March, and once again claiming that, oh, well, things are going fine. But once again, apparently that's not the case. And you had written a tremendous email to us about the continuing failures there at that office and sent it to a whole bunch of media. Tell our audience what prompted that letter.
Well, what prompted it is obviously it's not me. I have my own business, but I have now, over the course of a year, watched four people, four friends of mine, go through the Oregon Employment Department to get unemployment benefits, and every one of them struggled. Two of them got resolved, but two others, one just gave up, and one's in the middle of trying to deal with it, which, funny enough, this week there seems to be some movement, but it had nothing to do with my email. It was just constantly prodding, and something finally tripped. But what I saw over and over again, and what broke my heart, which is why I wanted to get somebody to pay attention again, is that you've got a situation where people are already in panic mode. They have lost their employment. They've lost their income. And as you and I both know, this economy right now is a struggle as it is. If you had savings, you may not have as much because everything's gone up. And so these people are in panic mode, and they go through this process, and it is a horrendous process because they say, you know, here's the things, check the boxes, you do everything, and then it doesn't go through, and it says, well, you can appeal it, and here's your deadline because you didn't follow the rules. But if you have questions about why you didn't follow the rules, give us a call, because nothing that they're giving these people is clear. Nothing. I've read it. And so the people call, and what do they get? They get a constant busy signal. If they're lucky to actually get through, they get put on hold. And I am kidding you not, it could be for 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, and then most of the time, that phone call then drops. If they get through, the person usually is giving them contradictory information. So think about that. Think about already being in panic mode. You're trying to go out and find a job, but no, you're relegated to sitting on the phone all day long only to have it drop off. You try to send a message to your online portal, and there's no return information of any kind. And that's what these people are dealing with.
As far as getting through to people, what do they attribute that to? I mean, is that they're overwhelmed? There's so many people unemployed. Do they need more staff? Do they need more funding? What is their excuse this time?
It is interesting. So I after I sent that letter out, I've been contacted by the Argonian. I was contacted by somebody at the OED. I was contacted by you. Sadly, I will say none of our politicians, both state and federal, have contacted me back, which is disappointing to say the least. But what I'm getting back from OED directly, what I'm getting back from reading other articles and looking at the reviews, even employee reviews of OED, is that OED says they don't have enough funding, that the feds aren't giving them enough money, whereas the previous employees, if you read those reviews, consistently say it's management. It's an issue with management, and they're told they can only be on the phone with somebody for 10 minutes. I would imagine that their workload probably doubled about a year ago, not to mention they changed computer systems, but if we all remember, they put forth the family medical leave, where now 1% of every single payroll dollar is going into a new medical leave here system in our state. So they would have effectively, quite frankly, doubled the amount of people or claimants. And so if you already had a system that launched and was failing, and then you add a bunch more people who are coming through that system, and you don't have a good management in place, and you're expecting those staff who aren't being supported to get the job done, you can only imagine how this is going. And again, where it starts is not clear direction or not easy access for this claimant to get through the process in the first place.
You know, the cynical part of me says that that's by design, that they want to make this complicated so that people just give up. And gosh, you know, if you've got all these people just giving up and, you know, thinking they'll just tough it out, then it's less work for them. And I hate to say that, but unfortunately, I think looking at how our government responds to situations, that seems to be almost par for the course, is that they want things complicated to discourage people from actually accessing the services that we as taxpayers are paying into. All right, we are up against break. Everyone stay with us. We're going to talk about some continuing problems there at Oregon's Unemployment Division. Lisa has some personal experiences with this. We'll talk more about that with her after this. Lisa Lettenmeyer is the owner and operator of HealthSource Northwest, and she specializes in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market for individuals, families, and small business owners. You can find out more about that at healthsourcenw.com. She's our expert when it comes to issues with the healthcare system, although today we're talking about another wing of the government, the unemployment division there. And you had written, just to back up a little bit for people that missed that first segment, you had written a letter to the unemployment department, to legislators, to media, ourselves included. And you were very frustrated with what your friends were going through. And we were talking during the break there, well, going out of that last break, I had said that unfortunately, it seems like it's by design, is that they want people to get discouraged and give up. And you said that's what one of your friends did.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what motivated me to do all this in the first place, is I refuse to just let a problem be a problem and not try to push something to get done. So of the two gentlemen that I've watched struggle, one of them is a young kid, newly married with a baby, and he's the breadwinner. She's a stay-at-home mom, and he works in construction. And as we know, construction can be very up and down on hours, you know, times of the year based upon the economy and weather. So he went through a time where he had reduced hours. And as we know, with unemployment, you can even claim with just reduced hours. So he went through the process and got denied and attempted to call, because again, they say, if you have questions, give us a call. So he's calling and calling. His wife is calling. They're both sitting on hold. If they get through, usually it's busy signals. And when he did get through, basically like 6 weeks into it, he was told by the person on the phone, if I remember correctly, yeah, so I can see here that, you know, your initial application, you did this, this, and this, but you didn't check the right box, you didn't complete this step, and so, yeah, you know, you're just out of luck. It's too late. And he said, well, I didn't understand. It wasn't clear. And she's like, yeah, I know. You know, we know it's kind of deceiving. It can be kind of, it gets tricky, but unfortunately, it's just too late. And so he didn't push any further. And so he effectively went 7 weeks before he was able to get back up to full-time work. And at this point, what he told me when we were talking is, I'm just doing everything I can to avoid ever having to go through that system again. He says, because I just gave up. It was so frustrating. They had to use some of their savings to survive. And this isn't what we should be doing to people in a system that not only they have paid into, but the employers have paid into. And this is a state and a federal issue, because a lot of people don't realize unemployment is funded by both. You as an employer pay federal unemployment taxes and you pay state unemployment taxes. And so to create a promise, a safety net for people, and then at the time of their need, that's when you fail them. That's right. When you make them feel as if they're not worthy, because you've made it overcomplicated. When they go to get help, they can't get through. When they do get help, they're told, yeah, sorry, too late. We didn't check the right box or do the right thing. And by the way, Mark, all of this has to be done online, right? Because again, you can't reach them by phone, and they will not see anybody in person. If you try to go to their office and ask for help because you can't get through, they turn you away.
What's the excuse for turning you away?
I want your audience.
What's the excuse for turning
you
away?
They won't see you in person. They don't give you an excuse other than to tell you, you need to do this online.
Wow.
That's what they tell me. That's what they told my friend when he was there several weeks ago. But here's the thing your audience needs to understand. Going through processes and paperwork is difficult enough. But can you imagine, most households these days actually don't have a computer, which seems kind of odd. But if you think about it, a lot of people have moved off to having a tablet, or in a lot of cases, a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Like my friend, both of my friends, they don't have a computer. They have a smartphone. So here you are trying to navigate a website and go through and check the boxes and fill in things and read these little letters that they're sending back to you on your cell phone, because that might be your only access point. And again, you can't reach them to ask a question. So you're being told, we won't see you in person. So everything has to be done on their whatever they have access to, which again is normally a cell phone. And that's not just for this department. I get to see my clients struggle. So my health clients struggle with this, my Medicare clients. So our entire government, whether it's going to be state or feds, have decided that, you know, we're here to help you. We're going to take all these tax dollars. We're going to create a system that's overly complicated. And then we're going to tell you, hey, by the way, we're going to have you navigate that on your computer, which most people don't have. So even my Medicare clients are relegated to trying to use their iPad or their cell phone. And I'm just sick to death that our government agencies, state and local, will no longer see people. In fact, Social Security has now told my clients that they're no longer letting people walk in to ask questions. You have to have an appointment. Wow. How long does it take to get an appointment? About a month and a half.
Good grief.
So please explain to me how we pay all these taxes for all these programs, and then when people need it, it's not there to support them.
Yeah.
And certainly not in a way they need it to be supportive.
You know, this country was founded under the principle of taxation without representation, that they weren't going to do that anymore.
That's how we got here.
And yet we're paying all these taxes and we are getting nothing for it. I'm so sick of hearing that it's a lack of money. And yet that's the number one phrase we're hearing from Oregon Democrats right now is we need more money. We need more money. For heaven's sakes, nationally, we are $36 trillion in debt. Here in Oregon, PERS is about $50 billion in debt, and there's probably about another $50 billion that's unfunded liabilities beyond that. Money is not the problem. It's the lack of results that are the problem. And nobody is stepping up.
Yeah.
Nobody appears to be competent. It's like here in Oregon, we've become used to stupid and used to incompetence. And because of that, we're tolerating, we are just putting up with it when we should be rebelling in the streets. And yet the Democrats just want to raise even more money this time around.
Yeah, and to your point before we went to break, when you say it feels like they want you to give up, you know, that's how it feels to me too, because that's what my friends did. My one friend just gave up. He never went and he never received those 7 weeks that he should have received. My other friend has been dealing with this since the first week of November. We think we've got movement this week, and that's just because I was like, hey, try this, right? So my goodness, to have something, and this whole time, because I've been, you know, helping him so he didn't end up homeless. He didn't lose his truck. And so I'm frustrated because here I am looking at this kid going, I love this kid. I'm not going to let this kid end up, you know, having a cascade of all these events because he can't get a benefit that we have all paid into.
Right.
And the watching him go through the mental anguish of this, can you imagine? You're already trying to find employment in a tough employment environment. By the way, Oregon's struggling compared to the nation. And here you are already struggling to find a job. That affects your mental health. But now you've got to deal with this. And what we're finding out this week, what we think is going to turn everything around, is that this whole time he's been going through the checklist and applying on Francis. Turns out he's also got to go through WorkSource and do a certain thing there that wasn't made clear. And again, he couldn't ask anybody questions because he couldn't get a hold of anybody. So just by just circumstance, we end up, you know, he goes down there and sure enough, WorkSource, walk right in the door.
Yeah.
And they'll help you and answer questions. So basically, if it wasn't for that, he would never have known what went wrong. And so it's trying to get fixed right now. But my goodness, could you make it more difficult for people to get the assistance that they need in a state where we already have a homeless problem?
Right.
Where we already have
and again,
literally more than 1 in 4 people are on Medicaid in this state.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be at those numbers.
No. And as you pointed out, this is at a time when people need government the most and government completely fails them. All right. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Lisa Lettmeyer after this. And welcome back in our final segment now with Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource NW, an independent insurance agency. You can visit her at HealthSourceNW.com. We'll link that up in today's show page notes on the show is 15-06 on iSpyRadio.com. And Lisa, you know, we were talking a little bit there during the break, and we had also mentioned that this issue arises not from lack of money, it's lack of competence. And the other thing that is so frustrating, and we kind of touched on in that first segment, is that we are paying into this system. And about a month or so ago, there was that health executive that had gotten murdered, and there were so many people on the left that were effectively cheering that on. Oh, yeah, those dirty, evil insurance companies, they make all that money. Well, I'm sorry, but the government takes in a lot more money than any insurance company does. We are paying in to protect ourselves in case we lose our job, and then government is supposed to come in and help. And what they got so happy about that guy being killed was because insurance companies will routinely deny claims. And yet this is the exact same thing happening at the unemployment department.
Yeah. And that's you know, why I wrote the letter. And again, I'm actually going to circle back to my politicians and be a thorn in their side because I didn't even get the typical cursory generic response from
Pat
any
the head, yeah.
of our politicians, both local and national. But you're right. You know, there's always plenty of media hype around this insurance company didn't do their job. And when you peel it back, it's always, you know, I find the details way more fascinating and more truthful. But in this situation, the reason I'm just so on fire about this is that I knew it was an existing problem. They said they were going to fix it with this new system. And even when you read the reviews, right, you can see that like half the reviews are from during COVID, which was horrible. But the other half are literally in the last year. And the fun thing is, it isn't just somebody who was laid off or fired. It's now people that are asking for the family medical leave. And they might be fighting cancer. They might be on maternity leave. And so you're reading these stories of people that are, again, struggling just to get somebody on the phone to talk to them. And in one case I was reading, this gentleman was talking about how his wife is now unable to work because she's fighting cancer. He's had to quit his job because he's her caretaker. And here they are trying to get the family medical leave so he can be there to support her and they can pay their mortgage. And they couldn't get a hold of anybody. Hmm. So what, I mean, again, how is this not being trumpeted by everybody? Why is it that it's okay that over and over again, the state or the feds make a promise and they take the funding and then, first of all, they overspend? I mean, what they pay for, what they do, what they accomplish is ridiculous compared to the amount of money they spend. But the promise is never really there. In fact, you know, their own letter, not letter, but their own mission statement, which is comical, if you actually go to the Oregon Employment Department and you kind of cruise around for a little bit, right? And that's how I found their Google review. And I read their entire Google reviews, which they have a 1.4 star rating, by the way. But proudly on their website,
I'm genuinely surprised it's that high.
Right, exactly. But it says this, our mission, support economic stability for Oregonians and communities during times of unemployment through the payment of unemployment benefits. Huh, they're not doing it. I actually told them on my letter, you have failed in your mission.
Yeah.
And to read through these reviews, to hear from my own friends what they're going through, knowing just in every other aspect of my 20-plus years doing insurance, you know, I got to go through that fun gaggle of the Cover Oregon experience where we were told over the course of a year, we're building this huge system, we're going to do all these things, plus help people get enrolled, and we're going to train new agents. Mm-hmm. We would go to these trainings, and it would be static screens. Why? Because they were lying to us the entire time. They didn't have a functioning website. And do you know when we learned that they didn't have a functioning website? The day before we were supposed to go live.
Yeah.
And if your audience doubts me at all, the reason Kitzhopper was ran out of office was because of all of the mishandling of Cover Oregon and how his own campaign people had their hands in that to make it look okay until he could get elected.
Well, as I recall, it wasn't even just Cover Oregon. It was the entire Obamacare market. That system also failed, didn't it?
Oh, if you consider that you've now got premiums that are triple what they were for coverage that is
as far as the technology side of things, it seems like they tried to launch that Obamacare marketplace and they had like two people sign up type thing.
No, I mean, initially the numbers were horrible. Our entire system failed. So we have been using the government system ever since then. But now Oregon has decided in the next 2 years, they're going to create their own system again, as if, you know, failing and wasting all those taxpayer dollars the first time wasn't good enough. But my point is, for me personally, being somebody who loves to solve problems, that's what I do with my clients. That's what my talent is like. Every one of us has a talent. Mine just happens to be being able to maintain a lot of details and help figure out problems and analyze. And every single time I have had to deal with a state agency or a government agency, I am just blown away by how overly complicated and cumbersome it is. And again, I do this for a living. I am a detailed person. I'm a problem solver. I'm an analyzer. Most of the population, that's not necessarily going to be their talent, right? They were really good at being a doctor or being construction workers.
These things should just work. We use computers in our daily life. Correct. We know what technology is like. These things should just work. And yet for some reason they don't. And these kinds of problems, we talked a little bit during the break there that you wanted to deal with the family medical side of things, because these kinds of problems, this kind of incompetence, it's not just the unemployment department.
No. Like I said, Francis Online now deals with not just unemployment claims, but also the family medical leave. super important. And again, there's reviews on there, like I said, gentleman trying to help his wife who's battling cancer, and they're not getting their benefits. And I just can't understand how, number one, it's this difficult to have a working system, and number two, if there are problems, fix them. And number three, since it isn't fixed and it clearly is creating issues, why aren't we hearing more about it?
Yeah.
And why aren't people caring? Like I said, I sent my email to a barrage of people,
yes,
mostly
you did. Yep.
Politicians, and got no response. So I'm disappointed even in my own reps, who I've met with before and have had great interactions with. So, you know, where do we go from here? I don't know, but I certainly think...
Who are your reps?
That, Senator Girard, and then Rick Lewis.
Hmm.
So, and I also sent to Tina Kotek. I sent our governor. I sent to the secretary, our Oregon secretary, Secretary of State. I sent it to Merkley's office. I sent it to Salinas' office. So, you know, to not get even the cursory generic response was pretty disheartening.
That's pretty shocking. And again, I think it comes down to incompetence. And sadly, we see that at every level of government right now, and yet we're being charged through the nose for these things. And it's not going to get any better with this Democrat supermajority. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock here with you. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Just giving me the voice to be out there. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And God bless you what you're doing. During his inaugural speech, President Trump said that America should be colorblind and merit-based. On day one, he signed an executive order titled Ending Illegal Discrimination and Restoring Merit-Based Opportunity, which repealed several older executive orders that entrenched racial preferences in the federal government, its contractors, and its grants. An associated memo directed agencies to close their diversity, equity, and inclusion offices and to put DEI employees on paid leave until they can be fired. And finally, root out attempts to disguise DEI by other names. To talk about all of that, I'd like to welcome Donna Jackson back to the show. She is a CFAC policy analyst, businesswoman with experience in public and private sectors, and has spent decades as a pro-energy advocate for the minority population through her advocacy work with congressional leaders and ministry leaders. Listeners of iSpy Radio will also remember her as a member of Project 21 with National Center for Public Policy. Donna, it is great to talk to you again.
It's great to be here. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's always great to have you on. So according to analysis from the Heritage Foundation, Trump's order does three things. First, it bans federal bureaucrats from forcing or coercing contractors to give race and sex preferences and from giving grants to organizations that discriminate. Second, it announces the government's recommitment to the colorblind view of civil rights, which holds that the law must treat people without regard to their race, color, or ethnicity. This view has long been the law and is enshrined in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but many past administrations have ignored that fact in favor of racial preferences. Third, Trump's order recognizes that DEI practices in many companies, nonprofits, universities, and professional associations violate our colorblind civil rights laws and directs every agency to identify targets to sue in every sector of the economy. So this is pretty fantastic. If you're in favor of getting rid of DEI, can I get you to weigh in on those?
Well, you know what? I think that this is the best thing that's happening for this country. First of all, let me start off by saying DEI has nothing to do with the Civil Rights Act. DEI is critical race theory rebranded.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with making sure that individuals have access or opportunities. In fact, it's the opposite. What they've used is DEI to do egregious things like not teach English to black students, to not require homework, to not require people to be on time, not require people to be competitive.
Hmm.
You know, the thing is, when you hire somebody, and this is so important, you're hiring them to solve a problem.
That's right.
But what we're doing is we're acting like this is a charity, and it's not. If you can't solve a problem in your own life, how can you solve a problem for a company, for a government, for a corporation? You can't. So we need people that are competent. And what we've seen happen is that they've used DEI not to give people who actually exceeded expectations but may not have the correct people to advocate for them, they've actually used it the opposite way. They've used it to discredit individuals who actually had the skill sets we need to stop them from getting opportunities. You know, it's amazing to me. A lot of times people think that DEI benefits black people. It does not.
Yeah.
In fact, you have a
great article on that that I would certainly like to talk to you about, but we'll get to that in the next segment. You had mentioned a really important part there about this notion of being competent. And Trump dismantling DEI initiatives at the federal level drew a lot of strong reactions, you know, as you'd expect from the mainstream media. And then the plane and helicopter collision happened, and there were rumors, I don't know if they've been confirmed or not, that the people in the control tower were themselves products of DEI. It was like we got a live demonstration of why you need to choose competency over identity. But, you know, in prepping for the show, I got to thinking about this, and I'd like to run this by you to get your thoughts. If DEI was not about race but about pretty, we would be outraged. I mean, imagine hiring an air traffic controller who wasn't qualified, who doesn't have the skills or knowledge and experience that she ought to have in that position, but she's pretty. And yet she nearly has an accident every day because she's too distracted, primping in the radar screen reflection. And when somebody points out how unskilled she is and how that puts people in real danger, the hiring manager says, well, it doesn't matter. She's gorgeous. I mean, we'd be outraged at that. But somehow we're supposed to not be outraged if that same hiring manager were to say, it doesn't matter. He/him is a Hispanic transgender lesbian.
It's outrageous. And, you know, what we're seeing is that people's lives are being lost. This is about people losing property because they're not prepared. This is about people losing their lives because you have people that are not adequately fit. And you know what? Even if it wasn't a DEI hire, what they've done is discourage individuals who are competent from applying for those positions.
Yes.
And that's the reason why we have the shortage in the first place.
Yes, great point.
You know, in California, you looked at all the wildfires going on. There was a white man who applied to be a firefighter. Mm-hmm. And they told him, I'm sorry, you can't get the position because you don't fit the DEI criteria. Mm-hmm. He waited 7 years. When he was in line to take the test, all of the people in line had just been called that week. So we're discouraging competent people in lieu of hiring incompetent people. And, you know, if DEI was really an issue, that it was all of these people that couldn't get the opportunity because they were qualified, then why were our military recruits so low? I mean, we were like 25%, in some situations, 50% our recruiting levels. For the military to be prepared to defend this country. Why? Because they discouraged individuals who were qualified. In fact, they went through and did a purge.
Yeah.
They did a purge of soldiers who wanted to put their lives on the line, but they were white, straight, male, and Christian a lot of times.
Yeah, and no need
now,
to apply.
That makes no sense.
No, it absolutely does not, and those are great points. Okay, it is time for a break here. Coming up, we'll talk about why DEI was not just BAD. It was even bad for the people it was supposed to help. More with Donna Jackson after this. Donna Jackson is a policy analyst for CFAC. That's the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. She is a pro-energy advocate for the minority population, and we're talking to her today about the end, hopefully, of DEI. Donna also has a background in accounting and auditing, and speaking of which, I would imagine with that kind of background, you have got to love the work that Elon Musk and Doge is doing, auditing all of those federal agencies and exposing the tremendous fraud, and in my opinion, the money laundering from taxpayers into the pockets of Democrats, globalists, and the far left. Do you care to weigh in on that?
Oh, absolutely. I can say, finally, because that's one of the biggest things that I've advocated for, investigating the fraud that's happening in the federal government. So, you know, I think that language is important. If you're a private corporation, and you have come up with $300 million missing or, you know, not adequately used right, someone would go to jail.
Exactly right.
When you're in the federal government and you're missing $6 billion, then they call it government waste.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the problem with that, because the assumption is that we got a benefit out of it, and then this was the sort of the excess that we didn't really need. But that's not what's happening. That's government fraud. Mm-hmm. All of it is fraud.
Yep.
And when you go in and when we go in and do a audit, the first thing you do is a fraud analysis. You benchmark and see if this the cost of your sales, the cost of your goods is reasonable versus what a normal business or business of your size would use. When you have $8 billion spent to build 7 electric charging stations, that's not government waste, that's fraud.
That's right.
When you have a government that spent $53 million per school bus for only 60 school buses, but that's not for the total 60, that's each school bus cost $53 million, that's government fraud.
Yes.
We need to not only look at who got the money, how it was spent, but we need a forensic accounting to see where it went, because I can guarantee you it did not go for the causes that it was supposed to, and I can tell you that most people stole the money.
Yeah.
It's definitely fraud, and so we need to have more transparency when we look at what's happening, because it's further than mismanagement.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you, and I would love to see a forensic audit of the entire government. I think that's really required at this point, and I certainly hope that maybe Trump does in fact do that. So getting back to DEI, I'd like to read this from a post over on National Center for Public Policy Research. It's titled Project 21 Commentary on Rolling Back DEI. And in that, you are one of the commentators, and you said this: President Trump's executive order ending federal DEI initiatives is the right move for Black America. Victimhood is rarely for the victim. Like most liberal policies, it's a way to use minorities for political and financial gain. But DEI programs were never designed to benefit Black Americans. In fact, within the DEI industry, 76% of DEI professionals are white, while less than 4% are Black. Equity wasn't even practiced within the DEI profession. And even more egregiously, DEI was used as a tool to deliberately make minority students less competitive in the marketplace. DEI was used to protect teachers' unions that continued to fail minority students, and Black DEI professionals who cried foul were intimidated and dismissed. And I love all of that, and I agree 100%. That was shocking to find out that the majority of DEI professionals are white.
Yes, they are. I mean, in fact, the Black DEI professionals, if they cried, if they had a problem with some of the initiatives, they would say, like, don't teach African-American kids math. Don't have them take tests. Don't have them speak English. I mean, don't teach them how to read. I mean, this is outrageous. Those individuals would be intimidated and fired.
Mm.
Only 3.8% of DEI professionals are Black. And the ones that are DEI professionals, they're too afraid to speak up when they see the atrocities that they're advocating for. I mean, you have a situation where people think that African-Americans are too stupid to get an ID card. So, you know, think about when you're looking at these people, when you're looking at African-Americans, and I'm a corporation and everybody has a brand, I'm a corporation and I need to hire somebody because, you know, auditors are on my back. I'm not going to hire an African-American that I've been told they don't know how to get an ID card. I'm not going to hire African Americans, but I'm now hearing that they can't take a test. They can't compete. You have to make a carve out and lower standards for them to be able to pass. You know, when I'm a corporation, I'm not the government where our taxpayers are paying all of my administrative costs. If I don't produce a good product, I lose money and I go bankrupt. So I'm not going to hire these individuals that you constantly told us don't have the merit, don't have accountability, don't have tenacity, don't have the strategic skills to be able to solve my problems. Now, I might hire one or two that I've used for my photo op, but that's going to be as far as it's going to be, because people and corporations, they hire people because they need a job solved.
That's right.
They need a problem solved. They're not there giving charity away. And so they, if they don't have a problem, they don't hire you.
Yep, exactly right.
And so we're sending the wrong message that somehow the color of my skin is supposed to get me a job. That's the, that's saying, well, you know, we need a nice paint color or wallpaper. No, I need somebody with a skill set that can help this company grow, innovate, and create.
Yeah, and leave
and
it up to...
And that's not what's happening.
No, and leave it up to a white liberal to come up with the idea that by hiring somebody simply on the color of their skin is somehow not demeaning. All right, up next we're going to get Donna's thoughts on how to finally kill DEI. And what about those Democrats? Might there be a surprise move there? We're in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. Today's show is 1506. If you want to find it on iSpyRadio.com to share that or to look for it on your favorite podcast platform. And we've been talking today to Donna Jackson, policy analyst for CFACT. She is also a businesswoman and advisor and board member for multiple conservative organizations and a firm believer in free markets and in entrepreneurship rather than government as a means of lifting people out of poverty. And we totally agree with that. And we've been talking to her today about hopefully the death of DEI. So Trump has already dismantled DEI at the federal level through executive orders and doing that while busily dismantling USAID, the FBI, and working to undo the CIA and solve wars in both Ukraine and the Middle East. But as far as finally and really killing DEI at the federal level and other similar racist programs, executive orders are only as good until the next president, of course. So to drive a stake in the heart of the DEI vampire, we need Congress and the courts to not throw it out. I'm sure your work with CFACT and Project 21 and that host of other conservative organizations, I would think you've been a part of a lot of discussions on how to do away with DEI and affirmative actions and some of these other race-based policies. What are some of the solutions out there that you guys have discussed to get away from this institutionalized racism and towards something where we finally see everybody as equals?
Well, you know what? Let's have some accountability for these organizations that enact these DEI policies. I'm talking about like the universities. Okay, so you have universities that will admit students based on these racial quotas. But they admit them, but the students never make it through graduation. They drop off after first, they drop out after the first year, and you have this continuous cycle of people that get this money from these students that are ill-equipped, but they never finish their degrees. How about we don't pay these universities until these individuals are actually able to graduate? If we based it on graduation rates, you would see a big turnaround in terms of students, in terms of universities lowering standards in order to let people in. You know what it reminds me of? During tax time, you get a lot of minorities that will get these big income tax checks. And then the car dealers will advertise, come and buy a new car. And some people get $10,000, $15,000. Okay? So they finance everyone. They come in, they put a down payment, they get a car, the income tax checks run out, and then 6 months later, they repossess them all. They never intended that person to actually be able to purchase it to the end. The same, you have the same situation in most of these situations with these DEI programs. You have these universities lowering standards, but they never intended those individuals to pass.
Wow.
They never intended those individuals to finish the programs. So they're getting all of this federal funding for programs that they know that the students will never make it through. We need to start looking at outcomes. You know, they always talk about equity, which they say outcomes. Well, what's the real outcomes? If we have a federal agency that's supposed to have a war on poverty, Let's look at those communities. Are there any manufacturing plants that are there? Are the test scores going up? Are there job creations in those communities? Is there higher home ownership rates? You don't see any of these people prospering one bit, despite the fact that these agencies have these DEI programs that's supposed to help.
Yeah. And
if you don't see the results, then the program is not working.
No.
But I'm going to tell you, competition should always be at the forefront.
Oh, absolutely. So real quick, there are such narrow margins in both the House and Senate, and it's possible we might need some Democrats to come over and support ending these institutional racist policies. Do you think that's even possible, that Democrats would come over?
I think you may have one or two. I mean, at the end of the day, the American people have spoken. I mean, whether I'm a poor Black, poor white, poor Mexican, whatever the situation, we all want the same things. But, you know, you cannot continue to spend at levels that's not obtainable. I mean, sustainable. And people can't shoulder the increases that this, the cost of all of these spending is having on individual, their individual lives. It's a regressive tax on everyone. Mm. And we need to make sure that our agencies are operating efficiently. That means having qualified people that can make sure they find faster ways, more innovative ways to do what we need to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really look forward to, as Trump said, a truly colorblind America, because and really just get away from this racial division. I find that so distasteful that we can't unite around these things. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Donna, well, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I don't know if those Democrats can be brought around. I'd like to think so. But so far, with all that USAID funding being exposed as the global piggy bank for leftist ideology, they have been pretty tone deaf. People want our taxpayer dollars to be used responsibly for things we can all agree on, not things like hundreds of millions of dollars to religious organizations helping illegal immigrants to break our laws, or backdoor payments to congressmen and senators. So far, instead of recognizing this as a real turning point in America, Democrats have been shrieking about losing their money and attacking anyone that exposes it. At this rate, their 2028 election slogan will be, "Give us back your money." There's been a lot of winning, and I don't know about you, but I am not anywhere near getting tired of winning. But keep the pressure on and let those Democrats know what you think. Who knows? We might even get one or two after all. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.